2024 was an amazing year for space and astronomy news, and we released a new episode of Space Bites every week. And as you probably know, every week we put a vote on the channel where we ask you, the viewers, to tell us what you thought was the best story of the week. And then we celebrate it next week, we provide a new poll, and we keep going. And you thought that all of that data was just going to be forgotten, but no, we were watching, we were recording, and now here we are at the end of the year, and I am going to take your choices and reveal them back to you and show you in context what you thought were the best stories of 2024. Now, it's really important to understand here that, you know, there were many of stories that you're just not going to hear about. And that's because you voted for some other story to be higher. And so there's going to be a lot of completely notable things here that are just completely missing. And that's totally fine. You know, it was super fun to put up the vote, and it's going to be a lot of fun to kind of go through these. And hopefully you will all enjoy as we go through and look back at what an incredible year 2024 was. January, an ancient stone map, the true color of Neptune, slim landing, and the end of ingenuity. This is a nice mix, so we've got a lot of interesting stories in January. I would say the big story of this collection is the final flight of the Ingenuity helicopter on Mars. And this happened back in January, and we didn't know the full extent of what was going to finally happen until later on in the year. And really, we only got the final report just a couple of weeks ago from when I'm recording this. But you clearly had a fondness for Ingenuity over all of its 72 flights. And yet, on that 72nd flight, it suffered a massive problem, broke its rotors, and would never fly again. But also, we learned this horrible lie, that Neptune is actually more like the color of Uranus all along. And we thought that one was kind of this grayish blue, and the other one was this deep blue, but in fact, they're both a kind of grayish blue. And of course, we've got the slim lander, which landed successfully on the moon, just flipped over on its side. And yet, it keeps coming back over many more months as being an incredible success story for being able to work despite the problems that it suffered on its landing. And of course, this really cool map of the sky that had been in a tomb for thousands of years that showed the accurate positions of many stars, including one extra spot where there might have been a supernova. February, Slim woke up, an impossible galaxy, an ocean on Mimas, and the Odysseus landing. And so to continue from January, Japan's Slim lander landed on its side and all hope was lost, but it was able to send some final communications right at the end of the month when sunlight finally reached its solar panels. But then obviously it was going to die during the long, harsh lunar night, right? Well, no, it actually came back at the end of the lunar night and was able to continue on communicating and did it another time. And so this lander, which failed to stick the landing, still was able to send some data home, able to last through the lunar night, and demonstrated some great engineering and some good ideas for future missions to the moon. And speaking of future missions to the moon, this was when we also got the Odysseus lander landing on the moon, and it also landed and then fell over on its side, was able to communicate a little bit of data home, and then failed, and it did not survive the lunar night. We learned that Saturn's moon Mimas, you know, the Death Star moon, it might also have a subsurface ocean like Enceladus and Europa and many other icy moons here in the solar system. And James Webb accidentally found a galaxy that's almost entirely made of dark matter. We have a lot of James Webb stories this year, and of course, we'll be including all of them in our annual James Webb year wrap-up. So wait for that next summer. March, how the universe lit up, boiling Betelgeuse, Starship's third test flight, and trains on the moon. All right, we had a bunch of stories here. There was continuing tests of Starship, and this will come back again and again throughout the entire year. We got this interesting proposal for building trains on the moon, which is going to be part of this sort of ongoing story about building more and more infrastructure on the moon by various countries, including NASA, including China. And in this case, Northrop Grumman came together with a proposal for transporting cargo on the surface of the moon. We learned that Betelgeuse might not be rotating as quickly as we thought. And this is because what looks like very rapid rotation might actually just be these giant convection cells on the surface of Betelgeuse that are boiling and frothing and making it look like it's rotating rapidly. But one of the big stories of March, and I think one of the biggest stories of the entire year, is the James Webb discovery that dwarf galaxies were probably the ones responsible for clearing out the cosmic fog in the universe. And so there's this stage in the early phase of the universe called the Age of Reionization. And this is when all of the atoms in the universe heated up and started to glow and the universe became transparent. And astronomers have long been searching, what is the cause? What created this Age of Reionization? And one of the main goals for James Webb was to answer this very question. And so in March, researchers announced that it looks like dwarf galaxies early on in the universe, pumping out radiation with all of their new star formation, was responsible for heating up the gas and causing the Age of Reionization. And so that was one of the biggest stories of the entire year. And you agreed. April, Vera Rubin's camera, dark energy results from DESI, pop 3 stars from James Webb, and Voyager 1 is fixed. So as you know, I'm incredibly excited about the Vera Rubin telescope, and I think I've gotten all of you as excited about Vera Rubin as I am, and of course we're going to see a ton of news coming out in 2025 as Vera Rubin finally comes online and we get those first test images. But in 2024, we got all of the instruments, the various mirrors, all of the parts getting assembled onto Vera Rubin. And so we were able to bring you each one of the updates. And of course, the winning vote for 1 week was when the main camera was installed on the Vera Rubin Observatory. Another story that a lot of you were really concerned about was when Voyager 1 went offline the year before and was spouting nonsense back to Earth. And engineers were able to work through the problem, restore communications with Voyager 1, and demonstrate that they can do troubleshooting, bug fixing, code repair on a spacecraft that is a light day away from us. There's an ongoing search for the first stars in the universe, these population 3 stars, the ones that are made of primordial hydrogen and helium. They have to be out there, but they are enshrouded in gas left over from the formation of the universe. And it's possible that we may never see those first stars directly, but astronomers saw evidence that there are those types of stars in the outskirts of galaxies early on in the universe. And so we might not be able to see the actual original first stars, but we can see the stars that behaved like the first stars, and that might be good enough. Another of the big stories of the entire year is DESI, the Dark Energy Survey Instrument. And this is a measurement of the universe in 3 dimensions, trying to help understand the impact of dark matter and dark energy on the expansion and evolution of the universe over time. And even back in April, we got the first versions of the DESI survey, and we got some really interesting analysis of how the universe has been expanding over time, add some new challenges to these traditional models of the universe. And, you know, where we are now in December, you're probably hearing a lot of people talking about, you know, challenges to dark energy. And so a lot of this has just been in the works over the course of this year as people start to really understand the results from the DESI survey. And we're going to see a lot more of that in 2025 when we start to get information from Vera Rubin, from Euclid, from, you know, and then into 2027 when we get Nancy Grace Roman telescope. So it's a pretty exciting time for cosmology. And I think, you know, we started to see those really interesting cracks open up earlier this year. May, water on an exoplanet, new evidence for Planet 9, auroras everywhere, and Voyager is doing science again. So we had a follow-on story about Voyager 1 in May, and you continued to be excited about Voyager 1. And it, like, is it nostalgia? I mean, what is it about us having this kind of almost human-like connection with these first spacecraft? For me, you know, I was like 6 years old when the Voyagers launched, and I have been watching through my entire life, and especially my entire journey as being a science journalist, watching as the Voyagers have made incredible discoveries, but then also started to fail as they get older and older. And I think, you know, we're all just watching with bated breath as these missions unfold. And another big unfolding mystery is Planet 9. Is there a large planet in the outer solar system? We see its effects with gravity on various objects in the Kuiper Belt, but so far this object has not been found. But of course, in 2025, when we get Vera Rubin, then that is going to be the observatory that will find Planet 9. We got really interesting analysis of the planet WASP-43b by the James Webb Space Telescope. It was able to measure these incredible winds and watch as the clouds were moving around this planet. The planet is tidally locked to its star, and they found that there weren't a lot of clouds on the day side part of the planet, but there was lots of clouds on the night side version. And I think this is really interesting when we start to find more and more of these exoplanets, many of them going around red dwarfs, will be tidally locked to their star. So could they have life on them? It really kind of depends on what the environment is like on those planets. But I would say the big story of the year was the incredible solar storms that were happening in May. And I was in Japan when these solar storms were happening, and my wife was back here in Canada, and she kept telling me how incredible the storms were, and I wasn't able to watch them because I was in these light polluted skies in Japan. But I know a lot of you saw auroras for the first time in your lives this year, and that's all thanks to the fact that our sun is in solar maximum. So we're still going to be in solar max for a while into 2025, so enjoy this ride. June, the most distant galaxy, Starship Flight 4, the Nova that never arrived, a black hole awakening, and China's moon sample return. We had five stories in June. I guess it's like a blue moon, except you can have five Fridays in a month. We got the fourth flight of the SpaceX Starship with the Super Heavy booster and Super Heavy crashing in the ocean with Starship crashing in the ocean, moving towards that momentous Flight 5, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second. It was in June when we started to talk about this upcoming nova in T Corona Borealis, and this is supposed to happen every 80 years. And yet here we are, well after when this nova was supposed to happen, and we still haven't seen it yet. Is it going to happen? Maybe it'll happen in 2025. But if it doesn't happen, that'll be really interesting, because normally these recurrent novas are predictable and you should expect to see them happen on a regular basis. And so to not see it happen is also really interesting. One thing that's been happening since James Webb launched is we get new records for the most distant galaxy in the universe that has been observed so far. And in June, we got the announcement, the confirmation of JADE's GSZ-14-0. And this was part of the JADE survey done by the James Webb Space Telescope. And this was confirmed to be the most distant galaxy in the universe seen so far. It was seen about 290 million years after the Big Bang. And this, you know, we've seen this claim quite a few times. I've seen them all the way down to 200 million years, but this is the one that we can kind of depend on because it was done with a much more comprehensive survey where they actually got spectroscopic data on this galaxy as well. Now, of course, this record will fall probably in 2025, but still it's good to know that the most distant thing that James Webb can see is just less than 300 million years after the Big Bang. And in June, astronomers reported that they watched a supermassive black hole turn on. And normally, supermassive black holes, they can be quiet, like the one at the heart of the Milky Way, or can they be actively feeding quasars that are blasting out material into space? And this month, astronomers announced that they saw that transition from a quiet black hole to an active black hole for the first time. And last but not least, the Chinese got their samples of the moon back for the Chang'e 6 mission. This is the one that went to the far side of the moon, bringing home samples to Earth for the first time. And this is, you know, this is the sixth Chinese mission to the moon, and there's going to be many more coming in the coming years. July, OSIRIS-REx results, a Mars terraforming plant, Viper canceled, and signs of life on Mars. One of the big stories that we had been waiting for was the OSIRIS-REx samples. Now, the OSIRIS-REx had taken samples from asteroid Bennu, had returned them to Earth, but scientists were having a hard time getting into the OSIRIS-REx sample so they could actually start to study it. And so they went through a bunch of really interesting processes to finally get a custom tool built that they put into their chamber so they could actually open the capsule, and they were able to get it done in July and then start to distribute samples to scientists around the world. And then we further reported a lot of the really interesting things that they've been finding in those samples. For example, that asteroid Bennu was wet in the past. How did that happen? Chinese researchers identified a plant that they thought would be able to handle Martian conditions. The plant is called Centricia caninervis, and it's found around the world. It's a kind of desert moss, but Chinese researchers found that they could simulate conditions on Mars and that this moss could handle it. And so it could be that this is the kind of plant that we could use to terraform Mars in the future. Of course, the plant doesn't grow without water. So the very first thing that you're going to need is water that can actually grow in those conditions. In July, NASA let us know that the Viper rover was getting canceled. And this is a rover that was going to be going to the South Pole of the Moon to help explore, help pave the way for the upcoming Artemis mission to the Moon. And this is a real disappointment. I mean, the rover was pretty far along in completion, but they canceled the budget. And there's, you know, overlap with other missions that are going to the Moon. The Canadians are sending a rover to the South Pole of the Moon, so it's understandable why its budget got cut. But still, it kind of sucks that it got this far into the process and then got canceled. And then we got the announcement that the Perseverance rover found a really fascinating rock on Mars. The rock was found in a region called Neritva Vallis. And this is thought to be this ancient river flow at the bottom of Jezero Crater. And the rock has this sort of white calcium sulfate with hematite blobs inside of it, and then has little black spots of iron and phosphate. And what's really interesting is we get rocks like that on Earth when some kind of biological process, bacteria, is consuming material, depositing its waste, and you get rocks like this. Now, it's not a clear-cut case for life on Mars, but it's one of the most interesting rocks. We really need to get those samples back from Mars. August, dark oxygen, graphene on the Moon, water on Mars, the WOW signal, and Betelgeuse has a companion. The big story of the month was the discovery of dark oxygen. These are caused by the nodules that are down at the bottom of the ocean. These are like just blobs of metal that have accreted over millions of years, and they're scattered across the bottom of the ocean. And scientists found that these nodules act like natural batteries. They produce bubbles of oxygen as a product of their chemical process. And what's really interesting about this is that then they might be filling up this area of the deep ocean, which is very oxygen starved, with enough oxygen that could help life survive. One of the big questions about life on Earth is, where did it get started? You know, some people think it got started on the surface. Other people think it got started down at the bottom of the ocean around hydrothermal vents. But if life did start down at the bottom of the ocean, it would need a source of oxygen potentially. This has interesting implications for not only the origins of life on Earth, but also the potential for origins of life on other planets out there. Places that are cut off from the atmosphere underneath a thick layer of ice under the water could still have sources of oxygen bubbling up from down below. Chinese researchers announced that they had found graphene on the surface of the Moon. And we've only known about graphene fairly recently, and it's a really interesting industrial chemical that has all kinds of uses, but now it appears to form naturally on the surface of the Moon. One of the interesting things about Betelgeuse is that it is a variable star, and it has one level of variability, which is probably due to its overall pulsations as it grows and shrinks. But there's a second signal in its variation, and astronomers have always been puzzled why that happens. And now researchers propose that that second variation in its brightness is coming from a companion star that is orbiting around Betelgeuse on an orbit that matches that variation. And so there could be this sun-like star that is orbiting just outside the surface of Betelgeuse, and that would explain this secondary brightness change. The WOW signal is something that people have been puzzling about for decades. In 1977, there was this bright flash of radio waves that was detected by a radio telescope. An astronomer just wrote WOW and circled the part where that big flare of radio waves came from. And people have been trying to explain it because any follow-on observations never found another signal coming from that area. But in looking through archival data, astronomers realized a really good explanation. That is that there was something really bright, like maybe a magnetar, that sent out a radio pulse or a fast radio burst. It went through a cloud of gas in between and created this bright flash of radio waves. And astronomers went back and looked through old archival data from the Arecibo telescope and found very similar signals to the WOW signal, but they could have those more mundane explanations. It wasn't aliens, it was a blast of radio waves going through a gas cloud. And the WOW signal matched all of that. And so it looks like we've got a perfectly reasonable non-aliens explanation for the WOW signal. Roy's looking for water on Mars, and NASA's InSight lander turned up evidence of water on Mars, a layer of it. The problem, of course, is that it is probably more than 10 kilometers deep where the water layer begins, so really hard to get to. InSight was able to measure Marsquake seismic activity going through Mars, and they were able to detect this distortion as the seismic waves went through this layer of water. September, China's Mars sample return, the Polaris spacewalk, Neptune mission concept, and the Mars zebra stone. We've been hearing more and more disappointing news about the potential for NASA's Mars sample return mission. The budget is getting cut back, the timelines are getting pushed forward, but we also learned that China is still moving ahead with their plans to retrieve a sample from the surface of Mars. Now, it's not going to be the really fancy version that NASA was planning, where you've got all of these perfectly chosen samples taken by the Perseverance rover. It's probably just going to be a lander, maybe a rover, grabbing a rock and bringing it home. But the plan now is China's going to launch this in 2028 and could bring that sample back from Mars by 2031. We saw the flight of the Polaris Dawn mission. This is a private mission that went into Earth orbit on a SpaceX Crew Dragon. And we saw the first private spacewalk by Jared Isaacman, who is the head of Polaris, and I guess it's going to be the future NASA administrator if he gets confirmed, but he was able to do a spacewalk. They were able to go farther from the Earth than anybody's been for decades and do a bunch of science experiments while they were up there in orbit. And in order to do this, SpaceX actually built a new version of their spacesuits where they were attached with umbilicals so they could actually depressurize the cabin and go on their spacewalk. You're endlessly fascinated by anyone who's got an idea for how to send a mission to Neptune, and they often win the vote every week. And back in September, we talked about a mission called Arcanum. It's actually a bit of an older mission concept, but we covered it on Universe Today, and so we covered it here in Space Bites, and you all loved it. But what's great is you've got multiple missions. You've got an orbiter as well as a lander. So you could get not only an orbiter around Neptune and some of its moons, but actually land on Triton, which is one of the most interesting moons in the solar system. So I will keep finding stories about Neptune, and I'm sure you'll keep voting them up. And then Perseverance found another really cool rock, this really neat zebra striped stone, which contains a combination of igneous and metamorphic rock. And it's believed that it was formed higher up on the side of the hill and rolled down, and Perseverance took a look at it as it was going by. And then, of course, I'm sure it wanted to like collect it, put it in its pocket, leave it in the car, and then fill the house with rocks, which is nothing like me. October, planets at Barnard Star, the largest structure in the universe. Starship Flight 5, Europa Clipper launch, and the results from Euclid. The biggest story of October was the successful flight of Starship IFT-5. And this was another test of the Super Heavy and the Starship. But what made this one special was this was the flight where Super Heavy came back and was caught by Mechazilla. And even on the flight number 6, we didn't see that same thing happen. And so this was really special. It kind of blew my mind to see this giant skyscraper fly back to another skyscraper and get caught. And it sort of gives you the sense of what the potential future of space exploration might be with a fully reusable 2-stage rocket. So, you know, we're going to see a lot more tests. Hopefully we'll see a successful catch of Starship and Super Heavy in 2025. We're part of the local group. The local group is part of the Virgo supercluster, and the Virgo supercluster is part of the Lanikea supercluster. And it turns out the Lanikea supercluster is part of an even bigger structure, which is known as the Shapley concentration. And astronomers were able to provide convincing evidence this year that we are all moving together and are gravitationally bound with this Shapley concentration. It has about 50,000 galaxies, and it has 10 times the volume of the Lanikea supercluster. Barnard Star is the second closest star to the sun. And back in 2018, astronomers announced the discovery of a planet, but then they retracted that statement. But then this year, they announced 3 more planets with a lot better evidence. And so now it looks like both the closest star system to the sun, Proxima Centauri, has planets, and now the second closest, Barnard Star, might also have planets. We've been watching the Euclid mission very carefully. This is this mission from the European Space Agency that has also gone off to the Earth-Sun L2 Lagrange point, and it is using two instruments to make this three-dimensional map of the universe. It's measuring the shape of galaxies to understand how light is being distorted and bent over vast times to measure the concentrations of mass. And then it's measuring the chemical composition of those galaxies to figure out what they're made of and also how fast they're moving away from us. And together, they're going to produce the most accurate three-dimensional map of the universe that's ever been seen. It will answer a lot of questions about dark matter and dark energy. And in October, astronomers released the first partial data from Euclid. It's only about 1% of the final survey, which is still several years away, but this was enough to find about 100 million objects and will allow astronomers to calibrate their data, even do some beginning science from this test data. But over the coming years, we're going to see a lot more interesting information come out of Euclid. And then the other big story of the month was the launch of the Europa Clipper. And this is this mission that's going to Jupiter's moon Europa. Now, it has a very long journey. It's not going to get there until 2030. It has flybys to make. We're going to see a flyby of Mars and then a flyby of Earth. And then in 2030, it will arrive at Europa. Now, it's not going to be going to orbit around Europa. It's going to be following this very long orbit that brings it close to Jupiter and Europa and then back out again to keep it safe. Now, it's going to do a lot of the standard science. We're getting a lot of great pictures from the surface of Europa, but what makes this mission different is that it contains a radar system that will allow it to see under the ice, and hopefully it'll be able to map out pockets of water under the ice on Europa, help us understand where does this ice shell begin and end? Where does the ocean begin? What's under the ice on Europa? November. Miranda has a subsurface ocean, a steam world, the ozone hole is shrinking, and a star from another galaxy. We talked about the discovery of an under ice ocean on Mimas. Now it looks like there's also an under the ice ocean on Miranda, which is one of Uranus's moons. You know, with this, there are probably under the ice oceans on dozens of objects in the solar system. I don't know what the full list is right now, but there's a lot. I would say the most interesting exoplanet discovery of the year was GJ9827. And this is a giant world. It's much larger than the Earth. It's much more massive than the Earth. It's orbiting a lot more closely to its star than the Earth is. But James Webb was able to reveal that its atmosphere is filled with steam, with hot water vapor. And so we're looking for examples of worlds that have liquid water on their surface. So finding a world with an atmosphere that's almost entirely made of steam is a good step in that direction. And so hopefully, eventually soon, we'll find a water world. And some good news, the ozone layer is shrinking. Decades ago, scientists realized that a coolant that we use, chlorofluorocarbons, is causing a degradation of the Earth's ozone layer. And so countries got together in 1987 and they ratified an agreement that they would cut back on that coolant. And since then, the ozone layer has been recovering. And in 2024, the ozone layer was the seventh smallest that it has been in since measurements began. And they could expect that it could fully recover by 2066. And so it shows that humanity can work together to solve some of these larger existential threats that face the entire planet. We got the first image of a star in another galaxy. Now, obviously, we've seen pinpoints of light in other galaxies, but this is a case where a telescope was able to resolve multiple pixels across the surface of a star. Now, the star is called WOHG64. It's located in Large Magellanic Cloud, and it's a monster. It's about 2,000 times bigger than the Sun. And so even though it is very far away, the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope was able to resolve features on the surface of this monster star. You're probably wondering why I didn't mention Starship Flight 6, and that was because this star in another galaxy actually beat it out in the vote. So still, it gets an honorable mention. December, robots that go under the ice, NASA's new administrator, why Ingenuity crashed, and a possible TRAPPIST-1b atmosphere. Although we're all really excited about the Europa Clipper mission going to Europa, it's going to be mapping out that ice, mapping out that subsurface ocean. People always want to know, how are we going to get under that ice and actually explore it? And NASA is testing out these really cool robots that can go and swim underneath the ice on places like Europa. And they're actually testing them here on Earth right now. Now, who knows if they will ever be used on a mission, but it's good to know how it could be done. We've got the announcement for President-elect Trump's choice for the new NASA administrator, and this is Jared Isaacman. We talked about him earlier with the Polaris Dawn mission, and you know, right now we have no idea what Jared Isaacman is going to be like. He is definitely a big space nerd. He doesn't have a lot of bureaucratic government experience. Some people think that's a good thing. Some people think that might be a bad thing. So really, we're all just going to be waiting to see how well he turns out in this job of leading NASA in 2025 and beyond. The very first story that I mentioned in this episode was the final flight of Ingenuity. And so in December, we learned what happened to Ingenuity. The helicopter was flying in a region that was really hard to distinguish surface features. As it was coming down to land, it hit this dune on a slope, and that caused a lot of stress on its rotors. The rotors broke off, and it was no longer able to fly. And NASA released this final report telling us what happened to Ingenuity. And I mean, the fact that we got 72 flights out of this helicopter is incredible. And any future mission that goes to Mars has got to be able to take a helicopter with it. In fact, NASA is testing out some really interesting, much larger versions of these helicopters. And so I'm sure we're going to have a lot of really interesting helicopter stories in 2025. And we've been talking a lot about whether or not there are atmospheres on the TRAPPIST-1 planets. Earlier this year, astronomers used James Webb and have ruled out the potential for atmospheres on TRAPPIST-1b and TRAPPIST-1c, and are moving on to the rest of the planets in the system. But other astronomers have said, well, maybe there could be some explanations for atmospheres still on those planets. And so it shows that there's still some room for interpretation. There's still going to be some arguments back and forth between astronomers. And I'll bet you in 2025, we're going to get a ton of news about the planets around TRAPPIST-1. All right. Those were all of the top stories for 2024, as voted by you. Of course, we'll keep doing this in 2025. We'll put up a new poll within about 24 hours of when we release an episode of Space Bites. Go ahead, take a second, vote, tell us what you thought was the best story. We will celebrate it, and maybe we'll do this again in 2025. All right, I had an amazing year. I hope you all did too, and I will see you next year.